Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Chris Allaire. I am the CEO, president, and founder of Averity, the team-based technology recruiting firm based, used to be based in New York.
Awesome, Chris. Thanks so much for making time and joining us on the Ivy Podcast. I want to spend a few minutes talking about your current role, Averity, and all the great stuff you guys are doing. Before that, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date, everything that you've done prior to starting up Averity.
I'll try to summarize everything I've ever done, but it's been interesting because I have been in the recruiting and the technology recruiting space for officially over 20 years now. And like most that I know, it kind of happened by accident. It was interesting because I was always more of a businessman and had a love of business than anything else. So I was always the banker monopoly, I don't know if you remember, like there's a show growing up with Family Ties, and Michael J. Fox was Alex P. Keaton. So he was always in the tie, always had a briefcase. And it's really funny to admit, but that actually was me growing up. It was like, I was always in like the tie and the briefcase. And I was always, really more interested in the business side of what was going on. So I get this entry-level job out of school where I get to wear a tie and go to Back Bay, Boston, and make a lot of phone calls. And I really had no idea what I was getting into at the time. And it was technology recruiting. I also happen to love technology, which works for me real well. Pardon me. I took to it like a duck to water, and I became very good at it very quickly. Spent 4 years with an organization, moved out to San Francisco, did it during the dot-com boom. Fast forwarding, it was fun because I took a break from the recruiting world, and I was very fortunate enough to work for one of Fortune Magazine's top 100 companies to work for. And when I did that, that's when I realized, honestly, kind of what the what recruiting was all about, because it became more about really being of service and treating people the right way. And then when I got back into recruiting in 2007, that's when recruiting really went from a job to more of a career for me. So I took all that experience that I had done and really put that more into building a recruiting career through my years. And so that was in 2007. I got right back into it, built a massive network in New York. I have pretty much an impeccable reputation in New York for what I do. And it really leveraged me when I saw a lot of things happening in the recruiting space, specifically in the technology recruiting space within New York. I realized that there's a lot of gaps in the business that need to be corrected. And that's when I decided to build Averity. So this is, April of 2014, and we officially launched in May of 2014. It really gave me the opportunity to use my real passions, focus on service, teamwork, communication, collaboration, and genuinely getting back to a point where I actually love my job. Mm-hmm. And those are the core kind of aspects that I really wanted to build something on. I think the recruiting business is undervalued by a lot of people. And my thoughts on it are, people have major emotional impacts that affect their lives. With a marriage, buying a house, birth of a child, the death of a loved one, and believe it or not, it's changing jobs. And these are very stressful times for people. So having someone that is a real trusted resource that can help kind of make that experience and that transition a lot easier for them, that's what I really wanted to focus on. So that's how Averity was born. That's where I come from. And that's kind of my background.
Oh, that's awesome. And thanks for sharing such a, diverse background. So Averity, you've been building this for quite some time now. Tell us a little bit more about kind of the competitive advantage that, you know, you foster in a building within the organization that really sets you apart from your competition, from other staffing and talent acquisition organizations that focus kind of within the same spectrum that you guys are.
So the biggest things that really separate us from everybody else are, honestly, is the company mindset. So the company, we have three kind of core pillars of success. The first pillar of success is that we provide an unparalleled experience and an unparalleled level of service with everybody that we interact with. And the thing that, like, most people would think is like, oh, it's kind of common sense, but it really doesn't work that way. And what I've always said is that if you're in a service-oriented industry, you need to out-service the competition. So if you are doing all the simple things, you know, say what you do, do what you say, you know, over deliver, under promise, total transparency in the way things are going to work out there, you're going to provide an unparalleled experience. And the key in that is the experience. It's not necessarily the service, you know, but it's just providing someone that ability to turn around and say, wow, you know, looking for a job was supposed to be stressful. You know, it was supposed to be a nightmare. Working with a recruiter, you know, all I've heard is that how recruiters are used car salespeople, you know, that don't, they treat you like a transaction. They treat you like a, you know, they're trying to hard close, you know, the round peg into a square hole type of thing. And your experience was completely different than that. You actually made me want to look for a job again in a couple of years. I hope I have to, so we can interact with each other. So providing that experience. Number two for me is teamwork. I'm a big believer in that teams win championships, not MVPs. So together, communication, collaboration, that all for one, one for all mentality, that's what our company is really built on, is that together everyone achieves more, that we are a team first approach and a team first mentality, not an individual. The third thing for me is I wanted to build the best company in the country to work for. I really am a firm believer that if people love their job and they love where they work, and especially with what we do on a day-to-day basis, that authenticity and that genuosity will come out in the way people deliver the message about their clients, about their candidates, and about what they do on a day-to-day basis. If people love their job, they will interact with your clients better. And again, I for some reason, people think that's common sense, but common sense is not so common. Why not create an environment where work is not a grind? You know, I've worked with people before. It's like, oh, work is the grind. You know, you don't get up and go to fun every day. You go to work every day. And I was like, why is work a four-letter word? Why isn't work fun? Like, why isn't what we do on a day-to-day basis fun? You know, life is difficult enough as it is. You know, 75% of your life is going to be spent working, you know, getting ready for work, going to work, working, commuting home from work. That's 75% of your life right now. Why not make that the most enjoyable experience possible? So those three, what I call the pillars of our organization, those are our big competitive advantages out there. We have technology products that we offer. We've got portals. We've got all these other things as well. But when our clients and our candidates talk to us, they hear the difference in the way we speak. They hear the difference in who they're talking to. And that's what creates that our advantage out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks for sharing that. And I can definitely relate to some of the, I guess, those misconceptions around the recruiters and the staffing industry professionals, because I've been on the other side of the table myself as a technology consultant for many years, and then growing within the ranks of, you know, within IT, I've had my share of consulting engagements, short-term stints within the companies, and worked with a lot of recruitment firms, and it's always an interesting experience. So, you know, I've had my share of dealing with companies that, you know, kind of go the route of just, you know, very transactional, but then there's also a lot of organizations that really definitely invest heavily into building that relationship, really understanding where you come from, because as you said, which is relatable on so many levels, changing the job, changing the projects is one of those major events, you know, along with, you know, birth of your child and so forth. And it's a very stressful period. So I think having a partner, like, you know, in the form of a staffing or a recruitment firm that really has a vested interest in making sure that they align your skills, your interest with something that the company is offering. I think that's very unique. And I think it's a very, distinct value proposition when it comes to competitive advantage. So that's very interesting. When it comes to, you've been in technology, especially aspect of the staffing and recruiting. I'm sure you've seen the industry evolve in all kinds of different directions in the past several years. What are some of the trends and ideas that really excite you these days? What are you researching, perhaps looking to invest further? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, so I love the tech space. I think, when I started back in the day, it literally is the boiler room, cold calling, fax machines, the kind of the pre-real internet days. So that was a very, very, very different than obviously it's morphed over the years. So for our end, from a technology initiatives, I keep thinking about this level of transparency. The idea that with social media and with social networks, you can't hide anymore. The online community, has become what it has become, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So it doesn't really allow for many secrets. And once it's on the internet, it's out there, it's forever. It's out there. So the idea of the transparency is you can like it or you can hate it, or you can take advantage of it. And in the recruiting space, I think this is where it's going to be. I think this is where it's kind of game changing. So the difference is for us, we decided to launch, during the pandemic was a very interesting time for us because we decided that we were going to thrive and we would become operationally stronger. And we were already in negotiations with the organizations to build some products for us. So we ended up launching 4 products around not only transparency, but just to innovate a lot more what's going on in the recruiting world. We launched our brand new web portal, which actually, it's a portal. It's called Human by Averity. And what it is we've decided to take all the candidates that we're interviewing, take all their, what they really do on a day-to-day basis, rather than letters and numbers and 3-letter acronyms, because it's like, just read Python on a resume. You're like, it doesn't make any sense unless you really know what someone wants to do and what they really do with it. And I think we talk to candidates all the time and like, I have .NET on my resume from something I did 12 years ago. And they're getting these emails saying like, hi, you're a .NET developer. Here's a .NET job. And they're like, I haven't done .NET in 12 years. What are you talking about? So, and it happens all the time. And all these candidates do is, they complain about it. So
you take enough. I still get those emails, by the way.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. It's like, my partner's been working for me for 7 years. And before that, he was in insurance litigation. He still gets emails saying like, hey, we have a great job as an attorney. He's like, what are you talking about?
I get bombarded with LinkedIn messages about that too, about like the little skill set I had, 8 years ago, my resume, my profile. That's so funny.
It's one of those things I'm like, okay, so, take that information that's out there and put some integrity around it and get your information to be accredited information. So what we do is we have a system, again, it's the Human Bioverity portal, where the candidates we interview, their information is actually up there, not where they work, not what their name is, so we keep that private, but if it's this idea of just an online shopping portal for you as a hiring manager or as a human resources talent acquisition person, et cetera, just to go online and look at what profiles are available, real candidates with accredited information. So we launched that last year. Again, adding some transparency out there as opposed to, I need a QA engineer and there's all these complaints that I can't find what I'm looking for. It's like, well, shop. It's right there for you. Shop away. And the feedback so far from people have been this is awesome. It's like very kind of a game changer for us. We've launched the candidate alert system. So basically it's almost like something for, it's like a Zillow for candidates. And this is not totally uncommon, but it's just something that I think is great. And the idea is rather than you getting pinged all the time about jobs that you have no interest in whatsoever, sign up for an alert system that sends you jobs that interest you. Right. Mind blowing. Like, wow, what a great concept. And again, I think that's, if you're a senior level Go engineer and your background is whatever it was prior, but you're like, I only want to know about Go jobs, you can sign up for that in our system. And when a go job is posted or whatever hits your trigger point, you will get an email saying, hey, there's a new job, check it out. And now you're getting job alerts that are sent to you about what your preferences are, not what we decide just to ping the universe with. We also are building something that's a candidate alert system from which like clients that are going to say, hey, when a new Go engineer becomes available, let us know about it. So kind of the opposite of what we're working on for on the client side. So there's other things that we're working on as well. In the innovation side, I think the communication piece is huge. You know, we have a candidate portal where it's basically your own private applicant tracking system. So any of the candidates that are going in there, you can look at them, you can move them through process, you can provide feedback in there, you can star them 1 through 5. That way, if you're interviewing 5 people with the same name, you're not like, man, which candidate was I talking to this morning? Or like, oh my God, I talked to this candidate, but then there's another one with the same name. Which one is which? You have all your information is kind of stored in there. So launching a lot of products around that can really help people stay organized. I think it's really interesting because over the years, I think data points has always been something that's been pretty critical for people, but the data points on really what's working, what isn't, and why, you know, that's more available to you now. And I think when you can see the data, you know, like in our portal, for example, you can see how long it takes you to move someone from submitted to first interview, to second interview, to offer stage. When you don't know what's going on in that and within that data, you have no idea kind of what's working and what's not, like why the offer was accepted, why wasn't it accepted, right? Or you're going like, wow, I'm not seeing what I'm looking for. Or man, we've made 3 offers, they keep getting turned down. Or wow, every single time I want to make an offer to somebody, this person's already off the market. And we can go back and just show people, well, it's taking you a week to go from submitted to interviewed. Here's data from our other clients that's taking them 24 hours to go from submitted to interviews. Their acceptance rate is 79 to 82%. Your acceptance rate is 34 to 36%. So when you have this data, you know, I believe it's marketing through education. You know, that's really what it's all about. It's having an educational resource that you can provide people to give them the data they need in order to have an understanding on what they need to do in order to improve it. All those data is available now. So I think the smarter recruiting has become over the years, they provided data points for it. It's like, I always say, it's kind of like tuning an engine. You know, there's always work that needs to be put into it to get it to be run optimal. So I don't think these are crazy innovations that are out there. I just, you know, none of these things were there years ago. I just, through polling our audience constantly, I keep finding that this is what they would love. This is what they want. So we're like, all right, cool. Let's build it. And this is what we've done so far. So those are some of the trends and some of the really neat things that I think have really excited me and from an innovative concept. And really, I think where the industry is going.
Yeah. And I like what you're talking about in the sense that innovation doesn't necessarily have to be this groundbreaking, you know, earth shattering innovation, so to say, that really changes everything. It's a lot of times misconceived from perspective of very small improvements to, you know, a simple process. Those are also innovations. And I think what you're talking about, leveraging data, leveraging statistics and things like that to understand where the gaps are, especially when it comes to candidate experience, I think it's very smart. I think it's the way to operate, because at the end of the day, if candidate is informed, candidate is kept up to date through the entire process, then you're already winning the game from that perspective. So that's, you know, very interesting trends and everything that you've covered. As far as working with your clients and your customers when it comes to building and fostering that culture of innovation, because at the end of the day, when you partner with your client companies, it's an opportunity for you not only to understand what type of culture they're fostering, what type of environments, but also then successfully try to match that with a particular candidate who would be a great fit for that environment. So when you work with companies as such, what are some of the initiatives in place that really help you, you know, help those companies build and foster that culture of innovation through some, you know, those exceptional candidates?
Feedback. I think providing and gathering feedback, what I've learned over the many, many years I've been doing this is where everything is made, because that's the communication piece. And if you can communicate the, what I would call like the reality of what people really want versus what someone's doing, then you can start to see the trends, right? So I've seen a lot of companies, they're saying, oh, we want somebody from a, a mobile first company. Now we want somebody who was like one of the original, I love this, they want the original person who wrote the algorithm for Uber. You're like, I love that you want that person. I think that's fantastic. However, what you guys are doing really doesn't interest that person. So, I mean, that's hard truth, but by providing that feedback, hopefully some people can kind of temper the results a little bit. I think it's really important that, I don't know how many people do this, but you have to constantly kind of poll your audience. You know, what are you seeing? What's going on? What's happening out there? And then you can provide that feedback to help people out. And I think, you just have to, I think it's just talking to people. So it's like helping companies cultivate a culture of innovation. I think the more you just explain to them and the more that they see what's working versus what's not working, they're going to understand things better. So, I mean, we've introduced a lot of new concepts where first they're like, okay, sure. But then they start using it and they give us feedback saying not only this like dramatic help, they're all of a sudden turning like, hey, listen, we've got 3 open roles in the data group. We need 2 security engineers and we need 2 more software engineers. Can you guys, can we connect you with those people? And then can we get them set up on the portal as well? Cause we've noticed like this is really working for us. Everything we were doing prior to this wasn't really working. So thanks for the help. So I think it's just making sure that the line of communication is kind of constantly open and it's very open and honest. And if you can do that, you're going to be in pretty good shape, because that's typically where things break down, is a lack of communication, too many emails, too many weird text messages that like are misconstrued, their emails get lost. My emails get buried by the end of the day.
Right.
I don't know really what's going on. So just the communication piece and really understanding, what you can do to help people out is going to innovate, it's going to help people innovate what's going on out there.
For sure. No, that makes perfect sense. It seems so simple, yet oftentimes overlooked. It's basic concepts of such as, transparent communication and feedback. I think that makes perfect sense. When it comes to, with us coming out of pandemic and, we've been hearing a lot about kind of that war for talent out there, with so many companies, hiring virtually fully remote capabilities. Then kind of the next phase is also really that war on retention, so to say, where now a lot of companies just with such, especially in IT, with such a great shortage of, exceptional talent out there, becomes a strategy to also, headhunt and go after some of the, top performances at other organizations, which, nothing wrong with that. When it comes to really helping your clients win that quote unquote war on retention and really build that type of environment to be able to retain and, grow the top performance within your organization, what are your thoughts on that? How do you help your organization succeed in that, on that side of the spectrum?
It's very honest with people. It's interesting, because as long as I've been doing this, the idea of this war, this battle for talent, the funny thing is it's always been there, dating back to a long time ago. It's headhunting's been around for a long time. I was trained, I've been in the business for over 20 years, and I was trained by people that were in the business for, 15 to 20 years prior to that. So I think the interesting thing is that it's just the battle these days is a lot more modern. We have easier ways to find people. That's what makes people a little bit more kind of pluckable. Back in the days, you had to literally cold call through a company to find a software engineer and be like, oh, you're a software engineer. Hey, my name is Chris. I'm a recruiter. And then you had to go through this thing. Now you've got LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook and all these things where people can literally post online what they do and what they want to do and literally just raise their hand and just like, oh, I'm looking for a new job. And then they get bombarded by people. So the attraction versus the attrition are very different concepts. I think more companies, they don't spend enough time, in my opinion, talking about attrition. They think it's really all about compensation or what sometimes we refer to as culture, but it's not culture, it's perks, right? You know, your on-site barista, your ping pong tables, your guitar hero, the kegerator, the on-site masseuse, you know, all these things that we've decided that are the cultures are all they are perks. What the pandemic did for us is it showed a lot of organizations that you actually have no culture whatsoever and that you, all you had was perks. And now when you are no longer going back to an office, the hard thing is like, okay, now what's your sell, right? So the biggest thing that we're trying to do is with people is like, you need to understand like what your sell is. From a cultural standpoint, what is your real culture, right? You know, my company is a culture of service, a culture of teamwork, a culture of collaboration. Those things were in the office, they're out of the office. We're stronger now than we were in the office, believe it or not, because that was our culture. If your culture was 3 square meals a day, dog sitting services and dry cleaning, you've got a tough sell now. So teaching clients understanding kind of what your culture really is. And then you can now, as you're selling people to come work for you, now you have a culture, right? Now you have something that you can really talk about. So, because what I call it, it's like, what's your culture when no one's looking, right? If you close the curtain, you're like, okay, now what's your culture? Or when everybody was home, it's like, now what's your culture? It's like, man, I've talked to people I've known for a long time and they started new jobs or like, and they were pretty high level, high profile people. I was like, what's the culture at your organization? And they were like, we don't have a culture. Like we have no culture whatsoever. And I'm like, you realize when the market picks back up, you're going to lose basically your entire team. And it was like, oh yeah, absolutely. And I was like, okay, well, you know, you should probably start with understanding that. I always say it's your culture is always your brand. Because if you have a brand first mentality, and this is something that I really think a lot of companies, sometimes they talk about it, but sometimes they don't. It's this idea of like the brand is the belief system of the organization. And does the organization that works for you, do they understand what the brand really is, right? You know, I've got the logo sitting behind me. You know, I've got the logo on my phone. And yeah, I own the company, but I can also tell you that everybody else that works for me also has stickers on their computer. They have them on their phone. I have coolers that I gave everybody with the logo on it. They bring it everywhere they go. They have their water bottle with the logo on it. So this idea is like, you know, if you give someone the logo, will they bring it with you? Like, will they bring it with them in order to, you know, kind of brag about where they work? So the brand awareness internally is a huge way to really help people, you know, really retain your talent. I think another thing is just, you got to tell people what you're doing. You've got to keep people in light and you've got to understand your audience. And if you can understand your employees better, then you can help foster an environment where they feel that there's growth, that there's challenge, and where their opinion matters. And if you can do those things, you can continue to retain talent because they know that something great is next in store for them. So I think there's a lot of organizations that I think need to start to really think about what they're telling their audience, which is their employees. And if they're polling their employees, how many of these companies are sending all these people back to work? Conversation with a really good friend of mine yesterday, who same thing just happened to him. Starting summer, we are back in the office, mandatory 8 to 5. I was like, wow, that's aggressive. He's like, yeah. He's like, so needless to say, I'm giving notice. And I'm like, okay, do you have another job lined up? He's like, no, I'm not worried about it. But I'm like, okay, wow. I found out that 40 people on his engineering team, 40 people on his engineering team are all giving notice. So that's a staff of 60 and 40 of them have just gave notice to you because someone in a glass office somewhere decided to mandate you back in the office. I'm like, wait, didn't that person poll anybody? Didn't that person kind of put out a poll that was like, hey, if we want you to come back to the office, how many of you would come back? or what would you do? And if you found out that 75% of your company was going to quit, you probably have a different thought about what your approach was going to be moving forward after that. So I don't know. I mean, this is going to be interesting the way people handle this. I think this is going to be the biggest story of the year, in my honest opinion. My prediction is moving forward the rest of the year, I think the biggest story that people will be talking about will be this: what is back to work? Are you back? Are you not back? Are you going back? How often are you back? Because you've now been productive remotely for over a year. Mm-hmm. So what's your argument to get people to go back to work again?
Right.
And I have embraced it. I was one of those people prior to this that was like, no, you need to be in the office. We don't work from home. You know, you're in the office. That's where we communicate. August of last year, I was like, closing the office. We're never going back. That's it. You know, get comfortable with where you are or move to someplace else you want to live. And everyone at first was like, oh man. Then I'm like, all right, great. Who wants to come back to an office? Who wants to commute through Penn Station again every day? And everybody's like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. Like, there you go. Right. So now you really have a real culture of like, it's a work-life balance. You can take the dog for a walk. You've got kids that you want to take care of. Mm-hmm. Take care of your family. Do your thing. Get your job done. And as long as you're still productive, First thing, I think that's the way it should be. But again, I'm not everybody out there.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no need to micromanage. So that makes perfect sense. Chris, you've been in IT staffing recruitment space for quite some time, and a good portion of our listeners are early stage career professionals. Those are coming out of, you know, second year MBA students and so forth, entering workforce. A lot of questions that we get on the podcast is around what are some of the, especially in current times, the most in-demand skill sets out there when it comes to technology? What are you seeing as the next kind of big thing when it comes to investing into developing certain skill sets? What would be your recommendations for those that are currently looking?
Security. I know that there's various answers that are out there. I know the typical answer is data. Yeah. Security. Mm-hmm. Security engineers are going to be the most important asset an organization has. If they don't have them already, they need them, right? You know, we hear about these data breaches. You create a secure environment, you don't have any data breaches. I think security is top of the list, whether it's cyber threats or hacks or whatever these people do that make our lives a little bit better. I think the remote culture is not going to go anywhere anytime soon. I read an article not long ago, I think we all heard this, about how a drone hacked into a Tesla. I don't understand the way any of that works, but security. I think second to that is going to be not so much the data analytics side, but the fostering of use of data. Because for years it's been, you know, business intelligence and data analytics has been around for a long time, but now it's the how do we use the data in order to improve processes, you know, gap analysis. So I think those are going to be some game changers for us. And then I think the, you know, back-end software engineering is one of those skill sets. You know, I don't know what the language is going to be or what the next big thing is going to be, but these are the people that make things run. So if you can tighten up your back-end software engineering skills, I think, you know, security, data, and back-end software engineering, that's the guts of the business. And those are the things where people don't think about when you're navigating an app on your phone, or you've pulled up Google Maps to get you somewhere, or you want to purchase a new water bottle on Amazon, right? All those things that are happening behind the scenes are making you feel secure that you're not just putting your credit card information out into the middle of nowhere. And then next thing you know, people out there buying couches on your credit card.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think I, you know, can agree more with you on information security, cybersecurity, especially with everyone and everything shifting to fully remote capabilities with people operating, you know, from their homes and whatever the case may be, that becomes even, you know, a greater need for such skill set to be able to protect the data, protect the information. So that makes perfect sense. The last segment I always cover with my guests is around what are some of the sources that you utilize on a daily basis to stay ahead of the game, to educate yourself on the latest trends in the industry. What are your sources for information?
So it's not industry specific, actually, believe it or not. I do a lot of reading when it comes to the recruiting industry. I kind of follow blips just to see kind of what's going on out there. But again, I'm more of the overall business, and I love the human psychology. Because that's, you know, I'm in the people business. You know, we're a people first company. People hire people. They don't hire robots and machines. You weren't offered a job by a robot. You were offered the job by a human being. You know, your boss has a name. So I'm obsessed with studying interviews. I love podcasts. I've actually really enjoyed listening to the Ivy podcast, not to just plug it, but listening to different people from different backgrounds about their different thoughts, because that's what, if you're in the people business, you need to understand people. I'm obsessed with Tony Robbins, not just because of his, I actually will go everything about the guy, but just because of his overall mentality on, deriving, you know, happiness and understanding people and understanding what really motivates people and what makes people happy. His interviews with people are incredible. So I'm just an avid, podcast listener. I just like listening to business podcasts and what they do. So my knowledge is really around, you know, the business in general and understanding kind of what's going on out there in the business community. And if I can understand what's going on out there in the business community, then I can understand where people are going. And then I can start to gauge my business along where I think it's going and then where it's trending to. So I also read a lot. I'm a tireless reader. I'm always reading different business books.
What are you currently reading? And is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Oh, I'm in the middle of two different books right now, because one of them I flip back to all the time. I think anybody who's in our business, anybody who's in our industry, I think you need to read. I buy them for everybody at the company, and it's mandatory reading. So the company Bible is Raving Fans, and if anybody who's ever in a service-oriented industry, I think anybody who's ever in any type of industry, if you haven't read Raving Fans, you need to, and you should make it mandatory for everybody who works for you to read that book. It's just about creating a culture where people love what they do. They love their job. I think it's a great book. There's another book that I love. It's called Fish. These are all very quick reads too. I think Fish is great. Again, it's about creating a work environment where you love your job, that you can make your job a lot more fun. I think there's another great book that I recommend to a lot of people. It's called Whale Done. Whale Done is a book where it's about what training whales. But if you try to train a killer whale with negative reinforcement, you know, your job is going to be short lived. But it's the idea of getting better results through positive reinforcement, you know, not, you know, really celebrating the small victories and really enforcing positivity and not jumping on the negativity. I think I would recommend anybody. Those are great reads. I've read a lot of, you know, I've read a lot of different ones, you know, with Outliers and a lot of these other books. I think there's none of them I wouldn't highly recommend. But those are the three that I kind of go to. If you're in sales, there's a great book called Peaks and Valleys. Again, it's going to take you about an hour and a half to read it. It just talks about the ups and downs. I think it's relatable to life as well, mm-hmm. because, you know, you get the top of the peak, and for most of us, you know, you're never really happy at the top of the peak. Why? Because we're human beings. And what do we want to do? We want to push ourselves and grow more. So it's understanding that when you're at the top of a peak, you know, you look up, what do you see? A higher peak. You're like, ooh, how do I get to the higher peak? Right. Well, typically in order to get to that higher peak, you know, you're going to go through a valley, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the downs and ups of sales, the downs and ups of life, the downs and ups of relationships. So I actually really, I love those like nice quick reads that you can relate to in so many different ways. I try to read them frequently. I read them typically once a year just to go through them and get new ideas from a different perspective. So that's awesome. I think those are some of my best.
No, love these recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the show notes. Chris, Ken, thank you enough for your time today. Very short, but very insightful conversation. I now know for a fact that we have two listeners on the Ivy podcast. It's my mom and you. So I appreciate the plug. And what I love doing with a lot of my guests is to do another recording in about a year and see how much have changed and transpired since our last conversation. And we actually will revisit what you and I had spoken about, you know, at this particular juncture, and then talk about, what did we predict correctly? What are some of the things that still make sense? So I love doing that with a lot of guests, and definitely looking forward to doing that with you.
Absolutely. It's amazing. I mean, we've all seen it, how, what can change in a 12-month period of time. Yeah. So, you know, last year was a lot different than this year already. That's for sure. So, awesome. But it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Likewise. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.